Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this audio cast number 2, we are going to be revealing one of the best kept secrets in the Catholic Church, secular institutes.
1, 2, 3,
listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake. Father Leo.
In this show, we are going to have an exciting, or at least for me, an exciting conversation about the kind of priest that I believe I am called to do. We're going to have a little interview with Father Tony Sciorra, who's the head of a secular institute. And as I mentioned before, many people don't even know exactly what a secular institute is all about. And so for this amuse-bouche prior to the interview, let me just kind of offer this joke slash story about the different kinds of priests that are out there, the different types of religious orders or religious organizations, and how they would respond to a situation. So here's how it goes. Many priests were gathered for Vespers, which is kind of an evening prayer, during an ecumenical council at the Vatican. Right in the middle, the power went out, and the priests were all cast into darkness. And without missing a beat, the Benedictines, who are part of the Benedictine order, Saint Benedict, continued on in prayer with the Liturgy of Hours from memory. The Franciscans immediately broke into spontaneous praise for the gift of darkness and light, marveling at God's creation. The Dominicans broke out into debate about the significance of darkness and light, while the Jesuits broke into a debate about whether or not this excused them from their obligation to pray Vespers that night. Meanwhile, the diocesan priest excused himself, went to the cellar, and changed the fuse. You see, every type of priest has a different form of charism. And that word charism simply means how you approach life, because that's kind of the unique angle that God gave to you in your life. However, there is a new form of religious life. They are the secular institute priests. And so if we were to continue this analogy, what would a secular institute priest have done? Well, guess what? They might have not been there praying at the Second Vatican Council because, first of all, they weren't, well, they were actually created prior to Vatican Council, but their job would have been not to have been in this religious community. They would have probably been in a family's home praying with them, or they might have been in a factory making the light bulbs in the first place. What do I mean by that? Yep, you heard it. We, Secular Institute members, whether you're lay people or priests, we are called actually to operate outside the church's walls into the secular world. So that's my little amuse-bouche, hopefully giving you an appetite for our deep dish discussion with Father Tony Sciorra when we come right back. This show is sponsored by Select International, 800-842-4842. If you want to join me, Father Leo, on an amazing trip to either the Holy Land, to Spain, any place in Europe, let me tell you, to experience not just the faith, but the real family of the people who live there through their food. All you've got to do is join me on one of my trips, and trust me, you will not only taste, you will also see the goodness of the Lord. So for more information on these trips, call 800-842-4842 right now. Welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake. It is really a pleasure. I am here in a Norbertine monastery, and so if you hear people in the background, it's all the monks praying. That's what it is. And that's so great to have with us, so thank you for taking the time. Father Anthony Sciorra, he is the current director for the United States District for Voluntas Dei. Now, my listeners know that I'm a member of this institute, but they have no stinking clue what this is. So what I'd like to do is give you a chance to just share a little bit of your background and how did you become the director of such an auspicious group of people?
Great. Well, Leo, listen, it's great to be here on the show with you. I'm really delighted. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that the Norbertines are in there praying, because I asked them to pray for me, that I do okay in this interview. So how did I get to where I am now? I mean, God only knows. The long and the short of it is this, that my life, I've been involved in a lot of different ministries, mm-hmm. parish ministries, teaching, education, formation work, spirituality work, etc. And I didn't start out in a secular institute. Secular institutes is a relatively recent phenomenon.
You were a Franciscan.
Yeah, I was a Franciscan, Capuchin.
Yeah.
Which I love, by the way. And
who doesn't love Francis?
Yeah, I know. Right? Right. Of course. How can you not love St. Francis? So there you go. So I still, in my heart, I still have that love for Francis and his vision. And I find that the long and the short of it is that much of his vision, quite frankly, I see it happening more cogently in the context of a secular institute. Because I think this is very much the kind of thing that St. Francis had in mind, was men and women living in the context of the world. He wasn't looking into like a monastic kind of a setting.
But there's a lot of people who don't even know that there are different types of priests. So, I mean, in a kind of a quick nutshell, can you maybe just explain, where does secular institute fit? Because people know of Franciscans and Jesuits and Dominicans and all of these people living in far-off lands and almost a castle-like experience. And then they know their parish priest who has to raise money for the bishop and to, you know, host the bingo.
Yeah, right.
What do secular institutes do? And then I'd love to hear just a little bit about the history.
Yeah, we don't do bingo.
I
want to assure you.
Darn.
No, we don't do bingo. Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. These other groups have been around for hundreds of years.
That's right.
Right? So, for example, you take Franciscans. Mm-hmm. People know Franciscans because they see the little, you know, salt and pepper shakers with friars. they see the little milk pitchers with friars on it. And so this is the image. Or they see the bird bit, or they've watched Robin Hood and they see Friar Tuck and whatever. This has been going on for 800 years.
Yeah.
So there is this long, long tradition. Same thing, for example, with somebody like Dominicans. I mean, they see with the white robe.
Yep.
And they'll see pictures from the Inquisition.
That's right.
So even people who are not religious, these symbols are ingrained in our culture.
But you know, interestingly, I look at the scriptures and Jesus is saying, you know, don't wear any fancy robes
and stuff like that.
Is there a habit for the secular institute?
Well, no, the very nature of us, the very word secular, I'm glad you brought this up. See, some people can look at the word secular in a negative sense, like you are secular.
Yeah.
Or a negative way of saying you are worldly. Right?
Yeah.
But for us, when we talk about secular institute, we mean it in a very positive way. Secular meaning world. And so what it is, we live in the context of the world. So therefore, we don't have any particular uniform or whatever, but who we are and the spirituality that we have is really what we wear. It's what we bring into the workplace, the marketplace, into the messiness of everyday life.
A lot of people ask me, and I just want to kind of throw it out there to you, is, are you actually a Catholic priest? I don't know if you've heard that question before.
Well, they asked the Jesuits the same question. They want to know. They want to know if they're
Catholic. Are any Jesuits listening?
Yeah, I know.
No, but I think people don't understand that you can be a secular institute priest,
right?
Because it is permitted by the church. In fact, it was started by the church,
right?
So maybe if you could, just for our listeners, explain a little bit about the history. When did it actually start, and then how did you get involved into it?
Yeah, well, you know, the actual start of it, the short version of a very long story, was 1947.
Okay. So prior, before Vatican II?
Yes. Yep. And also, briefly, before 1947, for hundreds of years in the church, there was always this impulse of going out into the world and living in the context of the world. But the church before 1947 wasn't ready structurally to include this kind of modality. So you had to live in a monastery or a convent or a hermitage.
That's
how it was, because they saw that you live only in that context. 1947, a shift begins to take place, saying you don't necessarily have to live in a monastery or necessarily live in a rectory or a cloister, for that matter. Your cloister is the world. That's what St. Vincent de Paul said to the Daughters of Charity. St. Vincent de Paul would be along these lines, even though, and he did not find the religious community of men, keep in mind.
Yeah.
So the idea was your chapel is the world, right?
Okay.
That's what he said. And so for us, we say the same. It's the world in which we live. And it is the world that we bring back into our prayer, and it is our spirituality that we bring into the world in our everyday life. See, and that's why we have priests, we have men, we have women, we have married couples.
That is a good question. So who makes up this secular institute? I mean, and what does it kind of look like structurally? Because I'll be honest with you, a lot of people look at structures of the church and they live by those structures.
Right, right.
But it almost seems like this is a little bit more open.
Yeah. See, this structure is relatively new. So this structure is one where you have ordained priests, but you also have the married couples and the singles who are part of the community. Now, we don't live together, although if you wanted to, you could choose if you're in a parish or whatever the case might be. But what it is, you are as brothers and sisters, treating one another as equals. So, for example, in our governance structure is that we have a director, assistant director, two priests and a married couple. So on our council, on our council, governing council, there's a married couple, right? And just in terms of our structure. And basically, what we're saying is we are a community that welcomes men and women who are really living out their baptismal call. So there's a great positive energy because of the mix.
Well, couldn't they just do that anyway without having to be in the secular institute? So what would be, in a sense, the argument for it?
Well, yeah. Well, the argument for laity, for married couples, but also for priests. Number one, there is a spirituality. We have a particular way of life that energizes us and particular values that bind us together. Secondly, there's a support that we give to one another. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, we gather regularly for team meetings and for national gatherings, etc. So, put it this way, I think what it does is it's hard, especially in today's world and today's culture, to live a Christian life. And so what this is, it's not too far off from the early centuries when people went into the desert to get support. Well, we don't go into a desert. No. But in fact, we have one another. We support each other. And we have the vision of our founder, Father Parent, Father Louis-Marie Parent, that really guides us and gives us a path in the 21st century.
So you mentioned Father Louis-Marie Parent. He's, in a sense, the founder of Voluntas Dei, which means the will of God.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I hear this quite a bit because there's not one thing that the community does. It's not like as Dominicans, you're not just teaching. Franciscans, you aren't working with the poor, you know.
Right.
Sisters of Mercy, you're not working in hospitals or anything. What does Voluntas Dei do?
What do I do all day?
Or even as a community?
Yeah, that's what my mother wants to know. What do you do all day?
My mother asks where I am.
Whatever.
If you want to know where I am, watch me on TV, ladies.
Yeah, right. And turn me off.
Exactly.
Right? Turn me off. Yeah, well, you know, that's a great question. You know why? The focus is not on what we do. You know, we do a lot of things.
Yep.
Right? Our people are involved in all kinds of ministries in the church. They're involved with all kinds of things in the parishes, in the dioceses, the schools. I can give you a list, you know, yay long. Yeah. However, the focus is not on what we do, but rather it's on who we are. The very nature of a secular institute is we live this consecrated life and we bring it to our ministries, whatever they might be, but we don't have particular ministries. We don't, you know, we have guys that are in parishes. We have guys that are in schools.
Which is why some people might call it, instead of Voluntas Dei, the will of God, Voluntas Mei.
Voluntas Mei, yeah.
Have you heard that? And what do you say
about that? I have. Well, do you know when I hear it and they say Voluntas Mei, My will, I go, listen, welcome to the club. Of course I struggle to do my will. I want to do my will, don't you?
Yeah.
Right? So really, everybody does, if you stop and think of it. I think of, who's the one from Hoboken that sang the songs? Oh, Judge, what's his name?
Blue Eyes?
Yeah, Blue Eyes. What's his name?
Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra, that's the one, yeah. And his song, I want to do it my way.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, in fact, quite frankly, of course I want to do it my way. But see, I think the fact that we can acknowledge that and say, I know I have voluntas mei. Of course I do. Sure. Everybody does.
Yeah.
But we acknowledge that and we say what we strive to do is voluntas dei. So do I do it perfectly? No. But that is the goal, that we really want to do the will of God. So even though some might say this as a joke, in fact, I want to say to a lot of other people out there, aren't you doing voluntas mei?
Sure.
So I think it's important to name that. And the important thing is for us is that we say, well, how do we move beyond that?
Well, I mean, when I wanted to become a priest, whose will was it? I believe God wanted me to.
Right.
But then they had to really ask me, do you want to become a priest? And so I just sometimes think that this institute gives people a chance to make God's will their own.
Yeah.
And it's a really beautiful thing, but it's different structurally.
It's different, of course. You know, Leo, you can get very trivial about this.
Absolutely.
For example, there's a nun that I know a bunch of years ago. They got these obedience letters. Dear sister, it is God's will that you do such and such.
Mm-hmm.
The letter comes in June. Something happens. She gets a second letter in July, and it says, it's no longer God's will that you go there. Now it's God's will that you go here. Ooh. You won't believe this. She gets a third letter in August. She said God changed his mind again in August. She gets another letter, right? Well, I was telling this story to another community, and this sister said, our letter was better. Our letter said, dear sister, you will be happy to do God's will by going to such a time. Now, not you're just going to go there, but you're going to be happy when you get there. So when we talk about this, and it's one of the beauties that I think we bring to the church, is how do we really talk about God's will in a way that's rooted in the scriptures in a way that really has an authenticity to it.
So this started before Vatican II.
Yes.
And what would be the reason for it? I mean, whose idea was this anyway?
What happened, our founder, who was an extraordinarily beautiful human being, great, great energy.
Father Louis-Marie Perron.
Yes, yeah.
And he's from Quebec.
Quebec. He is was an oblate of Mary Magdalene.
Yep.
He died about 7-8 years ago. He founded a couple of different communities in the church.
Like religious orders or religious...
Well, the first group he founded was a cloister group.
Interesting.
And the second group he founded was for women called the Oblate Missionaries of Mary Magdalene. We were the third that he founded in 1958.
Wow.
So Father Perron, he was on fire with this document.
Was he allowed to do this?
So
he got permission. So this is totally kosher?
He got all the permissions.
Because I think a lot of people are afraid that we might be doing something wrong if the bishop isn't approving it.
But
we're a pontifical right.
Yeah, we are, on that point that you're making, we are directly under Rome, under the Holy See. We are an institute of consecrated life.
Wow.
And so therefore, our constitution is approved by Rome. We have to give, reports to Rome, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we are on a par, in that sense, with all religious communities.
Okay, so people... We're not a bunch of weirdos. We're not rogue.
Listen,
we're not doing it only our way. We're underneath the Pope.
That's correct.
I love it. So he started three different communities.
That's right. Yeah.
And then,
what happened to him with Father Perron was this. He founded us in 1958. In 1958, he founds our community. And it was the year John the 23rd was elected.
Okay. And for people who are listening, he was the Pope who did Vatican II, all right?
Yeah. And Father Perron had met John the 23rd a bunch of times. He was with him at the council.
Mm-hmm.
So Father Perron was on fire. Perron was high energy.
Okay.
He was on fire with the council and especially with the missionary zeal. Don't forget, he was belonged to missionary order.
Yeah.
So our first members went to the missions. So the very first foundation in Voluntas Dei was in Laos.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
like the island of Laos.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's where, by the way, we have a cardinal that's Voluntas Dei.
Sure.
Right? Cardinal Louis.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Laos.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we also have a beatified lay catechist.
So we've got saints. We've got cardinals.
Yeah. The whole nine yards.
Sinners and saints on Voluntas Dei. And I guess the structure is so unique because they are lay people, married couples. And I guess, do they make vows?
Yeah, which, by the way, I'd mention one thing. The one who is Luke Tsai, who is beatified, yes, he's a layman.
He was a layman.
So our first beatified person is a layman.
Why is this such a big deal? Why is the lay people being part of the institute such a big deal?
I'll tell you why. Because even if you talk about canonizations, most of the canonized folks are religious. They're priests. They're
that's right.
For the most. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Right? However, that's for most. So lay people being beatified or canonized is more unusual because we had a culture in the church that emphasized ordination and consecrated life within religious communities. This represents, our community represents a shift that brings laity in on an equal par in terms of living the life of holiness.
So in other words, like to do God's will, you don't have to be just a priest or a nun. Voluntas Dei, the will of God, there's one for married people, there's one for single people, there's one for, you don't even have to be working in the church. You could be a police officer, trash collector. They can be doing God's will.
Yeah, but I would mention to you, don't forget, you can have laity, men, women, married couples, singles, etc.
Sure.
We're all together. And I find it's really, when we gather, it's quite exciting, mm-hmm, right? Because it's not just men, it's not just women. And so in our gathering, you'll find that generally speaking, when we gather, there's a very positive energy. People usually look forward when the whole group gets together. And I attribute it to some degree on the diversity within the community, that the diversity of having all these various constituencies.
So because we're all so different and there is not one clear mission, is there a motto or is there something that kind of describes who we are and what we do and what we're all about?
Well, you know, the symbol that is very central to us, mm-hmm, is the symbol of the Annunciation of Mary.
Okay, you might want to explain that because there'll be some people who don't know. I mean, people don't even know what the Immaculate Conception is. They'll confuse that for sure. So
well,
the Annunciation means...
Yeah, let's look at it briefly in this context.
Sure.
All right, let's look at Mary. This, by the way, I'm going to say something that's not totally accurate. She was the first secular institute member.
Well, why wouldn't she be? She was a secular woman.
Yeah, she was a woman.
But consecrated.
Living alone, mm-hmm, right? Consecrated,
yep,
right? And she is the one who says yes to the angel Gabriel when he comes, mm-hmm, that she would be the mother of God. And so Mary is the one who gives birth to Christ.
Yes. Right?
She's the one who gives birth. So this is the Annunciation.
Okay.
She is our motto. And if you think about it, of course she is. Here is this secular, mm-hmm, right? This woman. To use our terminology, we wouldn't call her this, but she was laity by today's terminology. She was
That's
a woman.
That's exactly what she was.
She wasn't a nun, wasn't a priest and whatever. Mm-hmm. So here she is, and she says this yes and brings Christ into the world. That's exactly our role. So this is our motto, is the Annunciation of Mary, speaking our yes each day by what we do. We bring Christ into the reality of our world, whatever that might be.
Interesting.
Yes, and we bring him into the world through the living of our spirituality, which is very, very simple. So it's not out there beating drums and blowing horns, mm-hmm, but it's through living a life really of what we call, in terms of our spirituality,
yeah,
bringing that energy into the marketplace.
She said, let it be done according to your will.
That's it.
And I guess who the second secular institute would have been, St. Joseph.
Well, yeah.
I mean, because he was just a guy.
Yeah.
And he lived a consecrated. This is kind of fascinating because it's a little bit of a shift in the way people see church. They kind of see us as kind of locked up or, you know, an hour on Sunday. And for Voluntas Dei people, we're like all over the place.
That's it. That's right. Yeah. You know, getting back to Mary and Joseph, I never thought about this until just now, right? But Mary and Joseph...
You've heard this, ladies and gentlemen, on Shoot the Shiitake, the director of the USA District, because of this show, has this revelation.
I have come to this great insight. It's, oh my God, I can't believe this. But let's look at it in this way. Mary and Joseph are now moving into a new structure, if you will.
Absolutely.
Right? They're moving out of a Jewish structure, mm-hmm, of the temple and spirituality into this new way.
Yeah.
And this new way, for which they were criticized, for which Jesus is crucified for this new way, mm-hmm, right? It's a new reality. Jesus comes to show us another way of living. Mm-hmm. So those who were stuck in what was the old way had a lot of trouble. What's going on here?
Sure.
Who are these apostles? They're a bunch of vagabonds. Look at them. They're running around the world.
They were considered kind of misfits.
Oh, they were. Yeah, of course.
You mentioned the new way. And before we take a break, I just want to get a comment on this. I didn't know of secular institutes in America. I knew them in Italy and in Europe where I lived for several years. And there was a community of secular institutes called Sheminif, which means the new way. It's a French community. And I thought they were the weirdest people ever. But they were doing such amazing work in the middle of, like, the city of Paris. And this new way comes challenges to those who see it the old way.
Yeah.
I'd like you to comment on maybe some of the challenges, and then we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, I want to hear about practical ways people can do God's will. But back to this. The new way and the challenges.
Yeah, the new way. See, one of the things is this. Since the time of the Second Vatican Council, which concluded in 1965, there's been a new energy, I think, in the church, and also how we see religious communities. So a lot of communities, for example, especially communities of religious women, and also some of men, are, and this is not a criticism, but they're very much on the decline, right?
Yeah.
And this, by the way, what this is, communities are not founded to be an entity unto themselves. They're there to serve the church at a particular time. So many of them have served the function for which they were founded.
Sure.
So they're dying. What's rising up is what we call new forms of consecrated life. That's who we are. It's something new. Now, it's interesting. On the higher levels, like, for example, with Pope Benedict XVI and now with Pope Francis, they're very affirming of this. And the reason Pope Benedict especially was very affirming, Pope Benedict felt, well, there's life there. There's energy. Something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
See? And Pope Francis, he very much encourages secular institutes. He tells us that we're instruments of the Holy Spirit. So they're seeing this from their, you know, upper level management, if you will.
How many are there? Secular institutes is a question that a lot of people ask.
I can't answer worldwide, but in the United States, there are about 20 to 25 represented in the United States.
And how about in Voluntas Dei? I mean, is this like a small community? Tell me about...
Well, Voluntas Dei, worldwide, we're about 700 or 800.
That many?
We're 700.
Wow.
Or the United States District, we are throughout many states in the United States, but we're also... in Germany, we are in Trinidad, right? We also, by the way, we have a mission of the United States in Ethiopia, in Addis Ababa. So we're there. Having said this, our institute is represented, I mentioned already, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, and that part of the world. We are in Latin America, in especially in Chile and Colombia.
So we're kind of everywhere.
We're everywhere. We're on every continent.
And there's at least 800 of us.
Yeah.
Which is pretty big compared to some religious orders that don't have many at all.
Yeah, no, exactly. So
I guess the interesting thing, and before we close, is this new way versus the old way. What kind of pushback do you get? What kind of challenges are there something different?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And I would say the response is uneven. There are those who really look at this and say, isn't this great? This is wonderful. I see the energy and so on. Those who might be more protective of what was, they want to know, how does this fit in to the structures that we have?
I think a lot of people ask
that question. Yeah, they ask that question. How does this fit in? So they're not used to seeing, especially for priests, they're not used to seeing priests in these roles. They're used to seeing priests, you know, in a rectory, in a parish, living in a particular way. This is a new way of living. So there is, among some who don't understand and have questions about this, etc. However, I always say to them, listen, by their fruits you will know them. Look what our guys are doing. And if you go right down the list, and you see the great things that so many of our guys are doing. And so, to me, it's the Gamaliel test from the Acts of the Apostles. By their fruit, you will know
them. Well, what did you say there? Because that was a lot of the Gamaliel test. Explain it for people from Acts of the Apostles. Just say it one more time.
Well, yeah, this is from the Acts of the Apostles. Well, to keep it very simple, the Acts of the Apostles was, Gamaliel says, well, let it go. They're questioning, should, is this thing of God or not of God?
Yep.
And he says, listen, just let it happen.
If it's of God, it'll happen.
And if it's not of God, it'll die.
Great.
It's that simple.
And that's a perfect way to end at least this segment. And when we come back, Father Tony Sciorra, and by the way, in the Institute, everyone just goes by first name
because we're
family.
Right.
So Tony is going to tell us a little bit about how one discerns, how does one kind of look into this and join it, and what do you do all day?
Good.
And more importantly, Even if you don't join, how can you do God's will?
And I'm going to go now to pray with back with the Norbertines for our next session that I say the right things.
Wait a minute. You're going to go pray. It's happy hour.
Okay. I'll go to that too.
Well, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to go shoot the shiitake with the Norbertines here. Father Tony, we're going to be back and in just a moment where you can learn how to do God's will wherever you are. Isn't that amazing? He's calling you to something. We'll be right back. This segment is brought to you by CatholicSpeakers.com. If you are interested in booking a Catholic speaker for your organization, for your parish event, for your corporate events, all you've got to do is go to CatholicSpeakers.com for a list of speakers and musicians, people who will certainly wow you, and you will even find me there where you can book me at either FatherLeoFeeds.com or at CatholicSpeakers.com for your next event. Welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. And while I certainly wanted to continue my conversation discussing Voluntas Dei, the will of God, with Tony Sciorra, the head of the Institute, God's will takes precedence over my audio cast recording schedule. He got called away to something for, you know, a pretty serious reason, so he's not actually going to be able to join me for the second part of the interview, but that's not a big deal, simply because I was going to be pitching him some softball questions anyway, questions with answers that I kind of already know. So we're going to just jump into the carryout order, so to speak, and just maybe answer some of the questions that you might have regarding secular institutes, because I'll be very honest with you, many people sometimes look at me and my decision from leaving the Archdiocese of Baltimore, where I was a priest, and now of entering into a different type of community. And it's a very different kind of reality, to be honest with you. It wasn't something that I thought of. And so let me first of all tell you that a little bit about my own discernment, because so many people have asked, how did you become a priest? Well, frankly, I shouldn't have become a priest. I grew up a very weird and normal kind of existence. I grew up in the 70s and the 80s. Y'all know that, when Michael Jackson was still black and Madonna was still a virgin, right? And I don't say that to be disrespectful. I loved Michael Jackson. I totally, almost in a way, idolized him. And Madonna, who didn't love her in the 80s? And I kind of pray for her, because just, you know, a few years ago, I understood and learned that she was actually Catholic. She was baptized a Catholic, and that's why some of her songs kind of still have those resonances of her Catholic faith. You know, Papa Don't Preach, quote unquote, like a virgin. The fact that she's named after the mother of Jesus Christ. How does this stuff happen that she just kind of goes off the railings? And I think one of the problems is that the Catholic Church, perhaps, didn't do a good job of reaching out to her. You know, maybe the Catholic Church's ministers, whether it was her parish priest or just some spiritual guide, maybe didn't present himself to her as she's becoming this Hollywood music sensation and celebrity. Basically, I think the church has sometimes abandoned the world, abandoned it. You know, I mean, because in our pursuit to become holy, we might have separated ourselves from the world that God actually created to make it a part of himself, good. You remember, God created the world and it was good. But because of quote unquote sin, we've kind of abandoned the world and all things secular, which is very strange, because that's exactly where Jesus sent his disciples to go out into the world in the first place. And so I grew up in a very secular age. And how did I become a priest? Well, I'll tell you, I didn't even want to go. I didn't want to go to church. In fact, I would tell my mom sometimes, ah, this priest is killing me. And my mom would say, you know, I would say to my mom, is like, this priest is killing me. I'm going to die. And she would say, well, you picked a good place to do it. I mean, it's the reality. You know, you grow up and you didn't want to go to church. You'd rather be in the world. But see, my mom and dad actually taught us to make sure that we could find God in the midst of the world. So as far as my vocation story goes, I started going to church
like earlier on a Sunday before my family 1 year because it was Christmas time and it was on a Sunday that the malls were open. And, you know, I grew up at a time, you know, in the 90s when the blue laws were still in place that malls and stores were closed on Sundays, but they opened up before Christmas holiday so that people could actually go shopping, right? So I was working in a mall, in a clothing store, which is why I'm so fancy of a dresser now, whatever. But when I was old enough to drive and old enough to go to work, I went to church on my own earlier than my family. And there was a very different priest. He was actually a missionary priest. And he basically said, if you're coming to church and you don't know why, I need you to come to at least one night of the mission. And if you don't want to go to church anymore after that, you don't have to go. So game on, brother. I called my mother up on a payphone. Remember that, folks? I put a quarter in the payphone and said, Mom, I'm going to be home late because tonight after work, I'm going to go to the mission. And she's like, what? Are you kidding me? You are going to go to the mission? And I said, yeah, because the priest said, if I don't want to go to church after that, I don't have to go. In other words, I was doing everything I could to get out of church. But, you know, I showed up at this mission, and it was very different because it wasn't like church. And the priest came out, and he did very different things. He explained the mass. He explained what the vestments were, which is kind of why I do that now on my missions. And I remember sitting there thinking, one, I'm not bored. Two, I'm not distracted. And three, I'm actually paying attention and am interested in what this priest is giving, which was basically formation and education in the mass. So I sat there kind of interested in realizing that, first of all, the word mass is not a Latin word that means boring. In fact, the word mass is a Latin word that means to be sent. And the word mass comes from the Latin mitere, which means to be sent like a missile. And therefore, at the end of mass, we're all called to be sent out of church. And that's how fast some people leave it. But sent out and do what a missile does, explode. And explode with what? With whatever's inside the missile. And it got me thinking, well, at the end of mass, what's inside of me? And I could only conclude Jesus is inside of me through what I heard in the readings and, of course, the body and blood of Christ, which I didn't even believe at the time. But this priest explained it. And because of his beautiful explanation of mass, my eyes were kind of opened and I realized that God is present in the Eucharist. And I'm sorry for anyone who's not religious. Please don't tune me out yet. I just want you to know that I don't want to get piousious. I'm just letting you know, that means full of piety. I just want to let you know that this was a revelation for me, that God could actually leave heaven and squeeze himself into a piece of bread, and more importantly, squeeze himself into my very closed mind. And that is the start of my vocation story. I started to kind of open up my mind just a little crack at a time to learn about the church, and I got so excited that I just started to ask the big question. And you know what the question is? God, what do you want of me? Now, granted, I was not asking that question in the 80s and even in the 90s. You know, I was a martial artist. I have 2 third-degree black belts in karate and in arnis, which is a Filipino full-contact stick fighting. So yeah, before priesthood, for fun, I beat people up with sticks. That's kind of what I did. And I was also a break dancer, a professional choreographer. And when I say that, it's because we made a little bit of money doing shows and we won competitions. And so, yep, you take a guy like that from a martial artist to a break dancer, and the next logical step is priesthood, right? How does this happen? Well, I was willing to, and this is the charism of Voluntas Dei, discern God's will. And this whole idea of discerning God's will is a form of a spiritual practice which requires us to almost empty out our minds so that we can try to figure out what are our gifts and talents, what makes us happiest. What do we see God possibly doing in us? These are all questions that I asked. And then I did another step of discernment. I actually talked about it with other people who were actually doing what I think God might have been asking me to do. Yup, I actually talked to a priest. You know, that's really strange for an 18 and 19-year-old young man. to talk to a priest, because most priests just seem so standoffish. And, you know, and before you can even meet with them, you have to go through like levels of secretaries and appointments. And, you know, priests will always say that they're so busy. When do they really have a chance to talk to, you know, young people? Well, I found out that if you think that you're trying to do God's will, priests, you know, and nuns included, will just clear their schedule to talk to you about a what is called a vocation. And a vocation comes from the Latin word vocare, which means to call, or I like to hear it as vox, voice in Latin, actionis, action. You hear a voice, and therefore you act on it. And that's kind of what priests are supposed to do. That's what nuns and religious people are supposed to do, help us all to hear God's call. So I made this appointment with the vocation director. That's a story in and of itself, because it was so ridiculous. I hung up on the guy a couple times. I was so stinking nervous about saying out loud, I think God might be calling me to become a priest, because that was just a shock to my system. And only after I discerned, first of all, again, what makes me happy, and you know what makes me happy? Doing good things for people. That literally makes me happy. What do I do good at? Like, what am I good at? And I think one of the things that I'm good at is organization. It is kind of creating opportunities for people, kind of like an event planner. I think I'm good at explaining some of the church's teachings, which I actually had to learn more about it myself. And frankly, I still don't know everything. And I'd be very weary of people who think they know everything about the church's teachings. Because again, some people don't even know what a secular institute priest is. So after doing these initial steps, including talking to people about it, including taking time in quiet to pray about it, going on retreats and just doing come and see weekends, I felt comfortable enough to just kind of make a next step. And that is to tell my family and friends. And you know what? I thought they'd all be freaking out because they would never imagine me, Leo, to actually want to become a priest. It's not that I was a horrible person. It wasn't like doing anything illegal, but I was a very questioning person. I didn't necessarily believe in God, or I did. I didn't want to do anything about it. And certainly I didn't agree with everything that the church taught. But guess what? I actually started to talk to my friends about it and my family about it. And what surprised me was they had seen a change in me over the years as I was kind of growing up. And I had to realize that if I'm going to go to church, it ain't going to be because my mom and dad are forcing me to go. It's because I'm going to realize it's not a waste of my time. That I realize that I actually get something out of it. And what did I get out of it? Some really great friends. I mean, some of them were super dorky and super corny and very stereotypically church homebodies. But then some of them were just super cool, normal Abercrombie and Fitch model looking people, you know, and they just looked like normal people that I'd want to hang out with. So I even went out to a group called Life Teen. Oh, we should talk about the Life Teen program, huh? And how that has been a very difficult part of the church's history, because the founder of the Life Teen program has left the church and in fact has been excommunicated by his bishop. But yet that program still continues, and maybe we should talk about that in a future episode. But I just started to realize that there are a community of people out there who actually make church kind of relevant, that they're not just all stuck in a cloister or they only believe in God for that hour at church. They actually live in the midst of the world. And so because of that, I started to investigate my vocation to the priesthood, originally for the Archdiocese of Baltimore. I was ordained June 5th in 1999. I studied in Rome at the North American College there, have 2 degrees in theology. One is in from the Gregorian University, and the other is a specialization called Mariology, Mary in the life of the Christian, in the life of the Christian faithful, and in the life of Christ. So that's my advanced degree. I come back to the United States, served as a parish priest, youth minister, prison chaplain, you name it, hospital chaplain. I did all the things that a parish priest does, including I was sent to the seminary, and it is there in the seminary where I realized I kind of stopped discerning God's will. You know, like once I got ordained to the priesthood, which was really a difficult battle. I mean, that's like 6 years of studies and formation, spiritual direction, and what do we call practical apostolic living, practical year of parish work before ordination. Whew, there's a lot that goes on into discernment, so that when I got ordained a priest, I thought I was done. You know, like, I don't have to worry about God's will anymore. I just simply do whatever the bishop tells me to do. And I did that faithfully. But when I went to the seminary, I actually was sent to help men discern their own vocation. I was a homiletics professor. I was the director of pastoral formation. And I also taught a spirituality class. And in that spirituality class, there were many questions about modern spiritual movements, And I had known about modern spiritual movements because after only 2 or 3 years of ordination, I met a priest. His name is Father Gerard. He was a Voluntas Dei priest. And while I was very interested in his kind of religious community, and he kept correcting me and saying, we're not a religious community, we're a secular institute community. Ugh. People, my mind was blown because I'd never heard of this. And then I remember, oh, wait a minute, in canon law class, we studied this for like 2 days, and it still didn't make any sense to anybody. Because what I learned was the secular institutes were a new form of religious consecrated living, that they had the vows of a religious order like Dominicans, Jesuits, and, you know, Franciscans, but they lived as secular priests, which is what a diocesan priest technically is, and they combine the secular character of your diocesan priest with the consecrated life of a religious order with one big difference. We don't live in community, and like the secular priest, they don't take religious vows, but we do. So one canon lawyer said a secular institute is like the best of both worlds. We take the secular character of diocesan priesthood and we combine it with the consecrated vows of a religious order, and pff, there you get, you know, like a Reese's peanut butter cup. You know, we get literally the best of both worlds. We get consecration and secularity all rolled up into one. And the real difference is that we don't live in community. We come together as a community every month, where we go through spiritual formation and other types of kind of spiritual exercises as a local team once a month. And then we get together with our annual, you know, we get together with our national team 3 times annually. They're like mini chapters. So in other words, we sometimes get together more than religious orders do. And we are called to live in the midst of the world. So guess what? I don't live in a rectory. I live in a neighborhood, which is kind of like in the hood of Baltimore, you know? I mean, I just live literally in the midst of the world. My neighbors aren't religious people. And actually, as one of my kind of, I love this part of Shoot the Shiitake, one of the shows each month is going to be dedicated to who's my neighbor. I'm literally just going to interview my neighbors and try to draw faith out of them because I already know them. My gay neighbors, my atheist neighbors, my Catholic neighbors who aren't going to church anymore, they come over to my house for dinner and I just say, gosh, I wish I had my recording device on so we could record this. And guess what? With Shoot the Shiitake, that's exactly what we're going to do. So in the Secular Institute, one of the unique things is that we live in the midst of the world as quote unquote leaven in society. And you can't have a lot of leaven, which is why the discernment process to enter into this secular institute, Voluntas Dei, it's not an easy process. It's literally taking 7 to 8 years for a diocesan priest to even become a full-fledged member of this institute. They take it that seriously that the formation is literally that long. And why? Because it's a unique calling. People in the diocesan priesthood, they don't have a charism. I mean, in other words, they don't have like a particular mission or job description like a Franciscan who's supposed to work with the poor, like a Dominican who's supposed to be preaching and teaching, like, you know, I am trying to think of like another religious order, like the Jesuits who have kind of a bend towards, you know, academia, like a religious sister, the Sisters of Mercy, who work in the hospital and medical fields. The diocesan priesthood does not have that charism, that particular mission, that kind of propedeutic to them, that kind of platform that you jump off of, that angle or perspective. That's kind of a very roundabout but fuller way of saying charism. You know, God gives a charism to every person. And therefore, if you want to become a priest, there is maybe an outlet for you. But initially, if you don't have a call to religious life or a charism, then you just simply join the diocesan priesthood, because prior to a lot of the more focused structuring of the diocesan ministries under the archbishop, you kind of were called to do whatever the bishop wanted you to do. And maybe you and the bishop, your priest, a diocesan priest and the bishop, would maybe meet and they would kind of discern, oh, you know what, Father X, you have a real call to work with the youth. I'm going to put you in the high school. You know, Father X, you really have a great compassion. I'm going to put you in the hospital. Father Y, you are really great with prisoners. And so we're going to send you to work with St. Vincent de Paul organizations and work in the prison. But you know what? These days, it seems like the charism of the diocesan priesthood, and I say that in quotations, is parish administration. We just need way more priests to work in parish life. And that's a good thing. Why? Because that is a primary school of faith. But might there be priests who are called to the secular character, but not necessarily called to doing parish priestly work? And, you know, I started to realize that when I met this priest so many years ago, only after 3 or 4 years of priesthood, that he was doing some unique work. And I was interested in him. So when I started teaching at the seminary, this whole secular institute spirituality kept surfacing when I was teaching my class. And for me, that was a sign that I needed to pay attention to what God might be doing in me, especially with my food and faith organization now called Plate and Grace. Was God calling me to be the quote-unquote cooking priest, serving up a meal for not just Catholics, but even non-Catholics? That's exactly what I was sensing. So when I left the position of teaching at the seminary, I went back to the Archdiocese of Baltimore, spoke with the new bishop. He was literally newly minted bishop. His name is Archbishop Lori. He and I had to discern whether or not I was called to the secular institute community. And it was not an easy thing to discern. He challenged me very appropriately, and sometimes it hurt. He just challenged me and he said, you know, are you just trying to do Leo Padalinghug's will, or are you really trying to do God's will? And you know what my will was? To try to reach out to the people not coming to church. And so I had to meet people where they're at, and they are in restaurants, watching the Food Network. They are, you know, in the midst of the world. And if we don't send people out to them, well, then they're never going to know that God has a will for them. So that kind of whole discernment is certainly not an easy thing to do. And you know what, people? Don't worry. Don't think that you're going to discern your own vocation perfectly, boom, because of this show. You're not. It's going to take a long, long time. So what I'm here to say, if you really want to try to discern God's will, one thing you got to do is take time and just let it percolate. You know, you're not going to learn God's will in a microwavable minute, because Cardinal Dolan says, and I believe him, God uses a crock pot. You got to sit and let God's will marinate in you. And you do that when you make intentional moments to actually pray about what you are called to do. And that means think about the things that make you happy. And can you turn that into a quote unquote ministry for others? Think about the gifts that God has given to you. Do you even know what your gifts are? And therefore, put them in God's hands. I can talk and I can cook. Boom! PlateandGrace.com. FatherLeoFeeds.com. That's kind of how it happens. And then we also have to think, is there a need? Is there a need? Like when I started going to church every day, not even on Sundays, those little old ladies, they would pray the vocation prayer and they would literally stare at me while they were praying. God, raise up young men to become priests. Yeah, I'm looking at you, little Filipino boy in the last pew of the church. You know, we have to think, what are the needs and how can we, with our gifts, respond to it? Another aspect of discerning is you got to talk to people, the right people. You have to be willing to learn and be educated, and that takes time. And then at some point, you are going to have to share some of your ideas about your vocation to who? Your family and your friends, and get a pulse in what they think about it, because they may say, That fits you perfectly. And then the last thing you got to do is you just got to kind of quote unquote pull the trigger and make a decision to call to actually enter into it. And of course, you can always learn more about your own diocesan ministries. Just call the archdiocese or your diocesan office, and they can point you in the direction of different religious communities, religious orders, and even lay organizations if you're not called to religious life. But if you want to learn more about Voluntas Dei, all you've got to do is go to Voluntas Dei USA.org, VOLUNTASDEI, USA.org. It'll go up at the Father Leo Feeds website when we post this all up. But you know, we're going to learn more about what God is calling me to do, because my job is to help others learn what God's calling them to do. That's why I'm super excited to let you know in the next episode, it's going to be a two-parter. We're going to hear about an ex-con with great conviction and what he sensed he was called to do, even when he was a Buddhist prisoner. He was also a great foodie. So we hope you enjoyed this episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. And then the next time, I hope you stick around, because we're going to hear about, like I said, a Buddhist ex-con with some great convictions. More to come when we come back for another episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo.